Today's episode is brought to you by my free upcoming masterclass, Why Just Getting Off the Pill Isn't Enough, 4 Steps to Optimize Your Fertility. If you have been struggling to get pregnant, you're feeling confused, anxious, or overwhelmed about the process, this masterclass is for you. The amount of time we spend doing research before we make important decisions like where to go to college, where to buy a wedding dress, or which new phone to get is probably more time than any of us have ever spent learning about how to actually help our bodies optimize our fertility naturally. I personally thought when I wanted to get pregnant that I would just stop using birth control and then at some point I would get pregnant, but that wasn't really the case. And unfortunately, 1 in 8 couples today is seeking fertility treatments and infertility rates are on the rise due to hormonal imbalances, poor egg quality, poor sperm quality, and other factors. But the good news is that there is so much that we could be doing to optimize our fertility right now through different nutrition and lifestyle choices that you make every single day. And I'll be teaching you 4 ways to optimize your fertility in my new live upcoming masterclass. If you can't make it live, don't worry, you can catch the recording. But I do recommend coming live because we'll have so much fun. I can be there to answer your questions and it's free. So I would love to see you there. You can register today and save your spot because spots are limited. You can click on the link in the show notes or head to laurenallennutrition.com to learn more and save your spot today. You guys, when I posted on my Instagram last week that I was interviewing Sarit Sher for the podcast, my DMs blew up. I am so excited to share this episode with you guys, mostly because I know that you're so excited to hear it. I got so many DMs from people who said they've done a session with her and it's changed their life. I had so many people who just messaged me that they follow along with her work on Instagram or they've heard her speak and they can't wait for this episode. I have to tell you, I didn't sleep so well after this interview because my brain was just like buzzing with everything that we spoke about and everything that Sarit shared. I learned so much. There were so many takeaways for me. But one of my favorite things about this episode is just that it's so different from what we usually talk about on the podcast. You know, if you've been here before and you listen regularly, I talk a lot about the science and the research behind these different aspects of our hormonal health. But Sarit uses a totally different set of tools and lenses than I use. I focus a lot on the physical health in terms of nutrition and exercise and sleep. And she just has such different modalities that she uses when it comes to healing. And I think you'll just hear the stories she shares about how she's helped clients through these modalities. It's incredible. So let me tell you, if you're not already familiar with Sarit, let me tell you about her. For the past decade, Sarit has worked as a healer and coach, helping people heal and transform their lives. Sarit has studied various healing techniques and methodologies, including analytical reflexology and analytical crystal stone healing. Through her work with hundreds and hundreds of clients, Sarit has developed a unique approach to working with people. Guided by her intuition, Sarit strives to uncover the unique healing path that each person requires. Sarit is an expert at uncovering the root cause of blocks or challenges, and in just a few sessions, helps one to find their unique path to fulfillment, whether it be health-related, familial, financial, emotional, spiritual, or anything else. Crystals and mineral stones are at the core of Sarit's practice, and in collaboration with her partners, Rachi Schnee and Joyce Azria, she fulfilled a longtime dream by creating the Healer's Collection, a healing jewelry line. Sarit was born in Israel, raised in New York, and currently lives in Jerusalem with her 6 beautiful children. Listen in to hear Sarit share the connection between emotional health and physical symptoms, how our energy affects our physical and emotional health, how mineral stones can help people along on their healing journeys, why so many women are anxious today and what to do about it, the emotional blockages that women with PCOS and fertility challenges commonly experience, how to protect your energy through boundaries and self-care, and so much more. You guys, this episode is incredible. I'm going to stop talking because I just want you to hear it. So without further ado, let's listen in and learn from Sarit. Welcome to the About Health and Hormones podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Allen, a recovered sugar addict turned certified nutrition coach on a mission to help women learn how to balance their hormones and optimize their fertility. On this podcast, we have conversations with experts about all things health, hormones, wellness, nutrition, and more to give you the information, tips, and tricks you need to take control of your health and feel amazing in your body. I am so happy that you're here and I can't wait to dive in. Hi, Sarit. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting.
I'm so excited. I've heard you speak a number of times, and I think you have a very special way of helping people heal. And that's really what this show is all about, how to find ways for us on our different healing journeys, whether it's with hormone issues or with other issues. So I'm so excited for everybody to hear from you. But before we get into all of that, can you just tell us a little bit about how you got into healing? Like, were you always that friend that was helping other people when you were younger? Was this like something you envisioned yourself doing?
So I'll tell you, I mean, I was definitely born an empath, and anyone who, you know, is in the know knows that an empath is someone who has a sort of ability to have a tremendous amount of empathy for another person to the point where they feel what they feel. And so they say that 20% of the population is empathic, where, you know, you walk in a room and if there's tension, they feel the tension. Some people are completely oblivious, but there are, 20%, I would say, of the population that is highly in tune, highly intuitive, empathic. And I always knew that I was intuitive. And even as a child, I could sense if someone was pregnant, and I would be able to sense if they were having a boy or a girl. And of course, it's like kind of luck of the draw, you know, there's a 50-50 chance. But I was super, super in tune to what people were experiencing, whether it be an illness or an emotion. And I just felt like I was hyper intuitive. And I think, you know, coming from a Sephardic background, it's not something that's looked upon as strange or, you know, unnatural. It's like kind of part of the culture. So I never thought that I would do anything with it. Technically, I actually was working for, I was a Lisa abstractor for Citibook before I became what people call me as a healer. But I ended up, after I had my last child, I ended up by a big Hasidic Rebbe. I won't say his name. And he told me that I actually had a higher purpose, and that I was a healer, and that I knew that, you know, I used to, you know, massage my grandparents' feet when they were, you know, when I was little, and everybody always asked me to rub them. My mother also had very healing hands. If we had any pain, my mother would put her hand on it. My mother actually, I would say, is a large in part the person that led me in this path, because she never raised us with medications or, you know, she was very wary of anything that the pharmaceutical company gave, because she's like, we don't know what's in this. And we were never given Tylenol or Acamol when we were sick. It was like, okay, a fever is good. It's trying to kill, you know, she always tried to use natural remedies and creams and potions. I think way before it was even a thing, you know, today, like everyone's kind of just like a turn towards the natural way of dealing with things. But my mom was kind of like ahead of her game. And she kind of raised me with this notion of, you know, look deeper. Don't just take things and don't just believe everything. And like, even simple things like, we never grew up with a microwave, because my mom would always use this sort of common sense of like, if it says on the outside of the microwave, move back when it's on, what happens to the food that's in there? You're eating it. And so she never allowed us to have a microwave. And there was always this attitude of like, let's try to figure out a natural way where your body could heal itself. So I for sure grew up with a sense that there is a natural way to deal with things that's much healthier and safer. Even though if my kids need antibiotics, I give them antibiotics, and I do go to conventional doctors. I'm not opposed to it. But I do believe that before you jump into taking drastic medical measures, you should try to find natural healing, you know, whether it be through diet, like is what you do, through exercise, through emotional work. And so I've tried to always find a more natural possibility before I jump into things that are chemical that we don't really know, that usually have a tremendous amount of side effects.
That's amazing that your mom was so intuitive about it. And I think a lot of the people who listen to this podcast, they're similar to me, that like they've actually grown up more on the conventional side, and they've tried the conventional things and had negative experiences. And I think that's also what's caused a lot of this, you know, turnaround. Now people are looking for the natural route because, you know, we've seen all these crazy things happen in our bodies and been like, wait, what? We thought this was, you know, I thought birth control didn't affect anything except preventing pregnancy. And you know what? It turns out it actually affects a lot of different emotional and physical things in the body. And I think there's this more general wariness that's coming up now, but it's amazing that you grew up with that.
They don't even put two and two together, where you have to understand if like 70% of the population in fertility years is on the pill and they're loaded up with estrogen, they're also urinating into the water system. And then we're drinking that water and we're having estrogen in our milk and estrogen in our meat and estrogen in fruits now, whether they're genetically modified to make them bigger. And it's like there's such a tremendous amount of estrogen overload in this generation that everybody wonders why. I mean, I see with my sons, my, you know, they barely have hair on their body. And you know, it's like, it's a completely different generation. And so there's a lot of negative side effects to men having a lot of estrogen and women having an estrogen overload. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, we have to take into consideration that, unfortunately, today, most of the doctors work for big pharma. They work for pharmaceutical companies. You open up any medical book and you look at the back, it says Johnson & Johnson, Merck, you know, Pfizer. And you kind of have to ask yourself, if the person who's writing the medical books is benefiting from it, then, and I'm not saying to go against it or not to take medication or not to speak to your doctor, but ask questions. You know, my mother would always ask 1,000 questions when we went to the doctors, and she kind of raised us with, don't believe everything that somebody with a white coat says. Do your own investigations. And so she just was like, didn't, you know, a lot of people see somebody with a white jacket and that's it, they're blind. Like whatever he says goes. And there is something to it. He studied for 7 years. He's had experiences. But I remember this woman, it was my sister actually. And she had been suffering with, and I was in Israel, and she was suffering with these stomach pains for so many years. And finally she's like, Sari, can I have an appointment? And at the time she was my assistant. And she's like, can I get an appointment also? And I said, sure, you know what, when I finish work, come at the end of the day, let me see what's this, all the stomach stuff. So even before she chose stones, you know, I have mineral healing with crystals, but even before she chose the crystals, I said, you know what, I'm not just like, lie down on the bed. Let me just touch you. Let me start to feel what's going on. And I just, you know, pressed down on her stomach. And I'm not a doctor, but just as like her sister, I was doing this, you know? And immediately I felt like she had an umbilical hernia just by putting my finger in there. I felt a hole. And I'm like, you know, Anat, you have an umbilical hernia. And she's like, really? Well, that's so weird. She had been to so many doctors and so many people, and she was suffering for 2 years, and like no one thought to touch her. And I said, or to even look at her. She just raised her shirt and her stomach looked crooked almost. And you just have to look with your eyes and see the most obvious thing, you know, like something was pulling on her belly button. And so whatever, she ended up going back to the doctor and taking care of it. But I've seen so often that today's medical world is sort of like, you go to the doctor, they're barely touch or look at you nowadays. They listen to your symptoms, they do their basic tests, and then it's like next. And it's part of insurance companies, and it's part of, you know, doctors, and I'm not blaming them, having like overload. And it's like, it's just not that time to sit with someone and really go through their whole system. It's like doctors are specialized. So there's the stomach doctor and the ear doctor, and there's no one that's looking at the whole person and the whole system. And I think that that's part of how I ended up doing what I was doing, was that there is this need for someone who kind of looks at the person's situation from the outside and looks at the whole picture instead of just the physical symptom that's in front of them. And I think that that's really where people enjoy coming to, because I use different modalities like analytical reflexology. I look at the bottom of somebody's feet and I look for markers. The body, all the organs that are inside the body are also marked at the bottom of the foot. And you can look at a person's coloring, the smell of their feet, where they have lines, where they have swelling. And you can basically get almost like an x-ray vision into their body just by looking at the bottom of their feet. And I also have, you know, 200 mineral stones. People come and what they choose, what they're drawn to, and what the order that they put the stones kind of gives me a reading into what the body's telling me is going on emotionally, physically, what they don't take tells me about them. And so I'm not just using my intuition, which was a gift that I was born with, but I use other tools to kind of analyze the body and see what the person needs. And I look at the whole picture, what's going on in her life, what's happening with her emotionally that could be contributing to what she's going through. And I think that that's why it's such a hit, because people want to be seen. They want to be heard medically. They want to feel like they want me to see the whole story, not just the symptom.
Wow, that's amazing. It's really interesting what you're saying about the heel of the foot, how you could see so much. I know that when I work with women, and I'm really primarily focused on, you know, nutrition, but we talk about also, you know, the whole picture. And after my first session with people, which is just an intake, I'm just asking them questions about their sleep and their stress and their diet and their family relationships. People sometimes tell me, like, I feel so much better. That was great. I'm like, you didn't even eat anything differently. Like, we haven't even started on making the changes, but I do see they're like, well, no one's ever asked me, you know, like, how's stress at work or any of those kinds of questions. And I do think people have a really deep need to be seen that's not being met. Certainly not, you know, on the medical side, which again, it's not anyone's fault. There's not enough time and it's complicated. It's a broken system. But anyways, I want to back up for a second, because I know you work with helping people in so many ways, but a big thing that you talk about is energy and like the energy that people have in their body. And for someone who's listening who doesn't even know what we're talking about, or that sounds really woo-woo to them, how can you explain a little bit about like how energy in the body can then also lead to, you know, different physical things that are going on in the body?
So I'll be honest with you, even to me, energy is woo-woo. What is energy? You know, when we talk about energy, we can go also into matter and the atoms and the cells in the body. And why is it that sometimes we say, oh, I have so much energy today. And some days I say, I have no energy today. What is energy? So energy is actually what we think it is as people who go throughout our day. And let's talk about it in like simple layman's terms. And that's actually what I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about energy in terms of frequencies and the universe, which is a completely different subject, very fascinating, but not for this conversation. I'm going to talk about how women look at energy, and we're going to relate to it the way we do, which is the term we use when we have strength and the term we use when we don't have strength. So we use energy as another word for strength, right? I have energy, I have no energy. Now, it would be strange to say, I have strength, I have no strength, because strength in what? Energy is sort of this not understood, like sort of thing that's in the body that we can't put our finger on. And the reason why we can't put our finger on it is because it's not one thing. It's a system of things that when they come together, create energy. So when I say, oh, I have energy, that means everything's working in a way like in symbiosis where it's like functioning. So the reason we use that term and the reason why it's unclear of like calling someone an energy healer is because it isn't this sort of like, it isn't this thing that we can't put our finger on. It's the thing that makes that all the systems work together. A person is not energized unless the heart's functioning properly, the muscles are working properly, the blood is flowing, right? As soon as something's a little off, everyone gets depleted of energy. And it can happen multiple times throughout the day. So energy is that thing, and people call me an energy healer. I didn't even name myself that. It was more like, you know, what am I going to call myself? A strength healer? You know, it was more like, what is this thing that's unknown that we can't put our finger on? We'll just call it an energy healer. And it kind of stuck. I also think it's woo-woo and weird. I wish I could find a better word, maybe one better word, and not call myself that. The truth is, what I see myself as is a mirror. I kind of hold a mirror to the person and I reflect what it is they're going through, and I help them go into balance. So it could be physiologically, it could be emotionally. Sometimes people come with a tremendous amount of emotional, physiological symptoms. And all I do is emotional work. And I can tell right their physical symptoms are coming from something emotional or it's coming from something physiological. You know, I once had somebody who came with like almost psychosis. And right away, by looking at the bottom of their feet and by the stones they chose, I saw they had severe parasite. And no one thought to look at the digestive system.
My gosh.
When they were having crazy psychotic episodes, they were just drugging them, and it wasn't working because they didn't have a psychotic problem, like they didn't have psychosis. They had severe parasites that were making them insane. Imagine having a creature living inside of you that's eating out of you. And they were just misdiagnosed for many years. And so as soon as they took Flagyl, which is like an antibiotic for amoebic parasites, they started feeling much better and they were able to get off of all of their psychiatric medication. And so it's very important to look at what is the energy of the body telling you? What is this person telling you? Sometimes I just look at somebody's, a lot of my diagnostics are actually from pictures. People will send me a recent picture of themselves and I just kind of like look into their face and their facial features. And, you know, I have a healing, I work with stones and I developed with two partners, Reiki Shinee and Joyce Azria. We developed healing bracelets where, you know, they take care of the marketing and the development of the product. And I create, tell them what the product is. And I've worked with stones and crystals for so many years that I was using them in my healing that I said, you know what? People would come in and I would say, okay, stick this carnelian in your belly button and then put the onyx, you know, in your armpit and then put the, and then at some point I realized I need to make bracelets because I need to combine a bunch of different bracelets. I needed to touch the skin. I needed these minerals to go inside the body through the skin. And basically I'm able to heal the body through the mineral stones, like as if they're taking a vitamin and a mineral. And so, you know, why am I going off on this tangent? Because oftentimes a person is missing something that isn't even, it isn't something tangible. It's like they need a combination of different minerals externally. They can't even ingest it. And so the stones comes in because it comes on the outside of the organs and their digestive system is so, you know, wreaked havoc that I can't even tell them to take a vitamin or a mineral. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where the stones come in also because they're healing stones and people, you know, people are scared of it. Like they think it's a Vodazara because when we think of stories when we were little, you know, Abraham Avinu, he had his father had all these statues and all these things. And there's other religions that worship crystals and they use it on top of their gods. And so we have an association with it. But in truth, the Judaism uses a lot of crystals. You know, Rabbeinu Bahaya has a whole book on the healing crystal. They say that the Rambam buried his books on crystals and healing those minerals because people were, instead of doing tshuva, would just use these type of healing modalities instead of realizing why is Hashem doing this to me. The Kohen Gadol wore crystals on his breastplate. He couldn't do the avoda. Every tribe had a crystal connected to that tribe. If the crystal itself had an issue with avoda zara, we wouldn't use it in the temple, right? The Kohen Gadol can't do his avoda without it. But there has been in the last century a lot of association with it as some sort of, you know, idolatry. And so I get like every day, four or five times a day, questions of, is this allowed? Is this kosher? And I tell people something that's really, really scary, which is if you take antibiotics and you think that it's the antibiotics that's fixing you and not Hashem, that can also be a Vodazara. Mm-hmm. So we have to know that Hashem put into this universe different tools for healing, but ultimately healing comes from Him. And healing happens when our body is aligned with Hashem's truth. And that's my job. My job is to clear away whatever emotional, physical, technical issues could be in the person's way for him to naturally heal. And so people can come to me with cancer and they're in the middle of chemotherapy. I don't ever interfere with people's conventional medicine. I don't get in the way of conventional doctors. It's not my way. And I would never take that kind of responsibility. But I will, with my healing techniques, work with the chemotherapy and kind of help the person deal with the symptoms of the nausea from the chemotherapy and try to move the energy of the body to concentrate the chemotherapy directly on the tumor instead of it all over the cells. And people find it very helpful. People find it, you know, like very healing. And so again, we start on this tangent talking about what is healing and what is energy. It's basically the thing that we can't see that moves the body. It's the thing we can't put our finger on, right? Like, if I ask you, you have energy today, right? And he'll say, yeah, I'm like a 9 out of 10. How do you measure that in what? Like, it's basically that all the systems are working.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting how you phrase it of, we kind of replace the word strength with energy. And I'm trying to think now, like, yeah, that is how I use it. Because if I feel weak, I would say, oh, I just don't have any energy to do that. But it's really a weakness. And it's interesting. I've just never thought of it that way. And I know a lot of also what, you know, you do with people is helping them work with their thoughts and emotions, especially around anxiety, which I'm sure a lot of people come to you with anxiety. It's something I see in the vast majority of my clients. I've had so many women, moms especially, reaching out about how, you know, they feel like anxiety is just part of them. That's a normal part of them. It's their baseline. It's not like, you know, they're there themselves and then sometimes they have anxiety. Like, anxiety is within them. And I'm curious if that's something that you also see, like, energy healing can be really helpful for.
So it's interesting because it used to be when I started my practice like 12 years ago that, like, let's say 80% of my clientele came with physical diseases. Today, I would say that 50% of my clientele comes with anxiety,
wow,
trauma, and emotional issues. And obviously, they also have physiological symptoms coming along with that, but they really suffer from severe anxiety. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the way the world is today that puts so much pressure on a person to be successful. Whereas, like, when I was a kid, there was no phones. We didn't, like, if my mom sent me to my friend's house, she had no way of accessing me for the next, until I just showed up at home or if she called her house. But I went out the whole day. I was gone the whole day. And so a person had to learn to let go, right? They had to learn to be like, I don't know. Now everything is digital and everything is accessible in 2 seconds and everything is virtual. So, like, I'm on Instagram and I see that my friend's house that she's posting is clean. And then I feel this pressure, like, wait, like, my house isn't clean. And then I kind of want to, like, take a 5-minute breather and somebody calls me. The level of access that people have right now to each other and sort of not allowing them to have the space to have, like, I call it the dead zone, where, like, it's like Shabbos, basically. That's why Shabbos is so amazing, because it's like all of those distractions are gone. And there's a time for peace. And that's why Hashem was saying, like, it says that when Mashiach comes, it's going to be a time that's Kulo Shabbos. And I always wondered, like, oh, I hope I'm not going to be able to not use electricity then. Like, what does that mean even? Like, what does it mean that everything will be Shabbat? But really, what is Shabbat? Shabbat is when no external factors can disturb my peace, where God's clarity is so clear that he runs the world, that I feel safe and I have inner peace. That's what Shabbos is. Shabbos, when you stop working, you're basically saying, I trust you. Mm-hmm. I trust you that even if I take 24 hours off where I don't touch my phone, I don't work to try to make money, I don't try to manage the universe will run exactly like it did before Shabbat. That's why it's so important. And I tell women, you want to be healthy, you have to get to a state of mind of Shabbos all week. What does that mean? That nothing I do or don't do will ruin anything. I don't have that much power. And the anxiety is coming today from this added pressure of almost like this competition that's happening between all of us, which is like, what job are you doing? How clean is your house? How beautiful are you? How skinny are you? Where are you holding? What are your kids doing? And everything is, we're kind of under like a microscope of videos where everything is monitored and registered, and you get to see yourself everywhere you go, and everyone's doing selfies, and everyone's looking at themselves. And that over-analysis of self will make you anxious, paranoid, scared, unworthy. I mean, there's always going to be somebody prettier than you. There's always going to be somebody skinnier than you. And when we're constantly being forced to measure ourselves and our kids up, we have no control over, and our spouse up over something that this society says is valuable, we're going to be anxious. We're going to be very anxious. And so I see it today. I mean, people have anxiety and they don't even know why they have anxiety. I had a woman that came to me with severe anxiety, and she happens to be an A blood type. And I actually really hold of Dr. D'Adamo's blood type diet. I've seen it to be highly effective with a lot of my clients. And I think that it's not the rule across the board, but I see it like 70% of the time where O blood types are better with protein. A blood types are vegetarians, and A's are usually empathic. And so why are A's vegetarian? So Dr. D'Adamo talks a whole lot about why that is. And he talks more about like the history of where they lived and they were nomadic. And I look at it more like, if somebody's empathic and he eats an animal, he might be eating the emotions of the animal. And then he might carry all of the fears of the animal before it was killed. And so I had a client once who had a lot of anxiety, and I realized that she, by nature, was very sensitive to any and all animal products. And she was eating the emotions of the animal. And when she got off of it, she started to feel amazing. She was always happy, because she wasn't picking up on whatever she was ingesting. And we know that this is a true theory, because God tells us to keep kosher. What is kosher? We only eat omnivorous animals. We don't eat carnivorous animals. We don't eat animals that eat other animals. We only eat animals that eat grass. Why? Because if we ate a lion, we'd be eating the aggression of the lion. And so God forbids that. And even more so a pig, right? Because it has some of the signs of kosher and some not. And the inauthenticity of the pig is so detrimental that God puts so many, you know, lavim on it, because we would pick up that emotion. And even, you know, shellfish and sea fish. So they are actually, why they're so toxic, because they eat the excrements of the fish that's in the bottom of the sea. So if you're eating fish that eat excrements, what does that say about you and your system? Are you a garbage dump? And so God's laws are not here to constrict us. They're not here to limit us. They're here to free us from a lot of things that we don't even know or see. And so oftentimes a person comes to me and they have anxiety. It's really because something they're eating, something they're doing, a lifestyle choice they have that's not appropriate for them. They're in a job that's not, it's not suitable for them. You know, like somebody who's not a numbers person, that their father forced them to become an accountant, and he doesn't come naturally to them, and they don't enjoy it. He's going to get anxiety because he's not doing what suits him. And so it's so common for even children to have anxiety, because today, by first grade, you have to have this milestone, that milestone, you have to take SAT scores, and we keep testing kids, and kids have to sit for 8 hours straight and the medication to sit. And then we're like, oh, this one's not obedient. I mean, since when does an 8-year-old child, since when was he meant to sit for 10 hours, especially the ones that are in each 10 hours? And then we start to create diseases for children because we're doing, asking them to do something they're not meant to do. So when a woman comes to me and she says she has anxiety, I do not relate to the anxious feelings at all. I first look and see, what is the anxiety coming from? There's no such thing that a person is anxious for no reason. And so you just have to kind of look at the person and look at everything that they're eating, everything that they're doing, who's in their life, what their relationships are like, what are they working in, what's in their environment, what's triggering them. I had a woman who was had severe psychosis and she had a mold allergy, you know, and I was able to tell that by the pastiness of her skin, by the whiteness of her tongue, by, you know, they ended up discovering a lot of mold. She actually was like on crazy psychiatric medication. It was just mold toxicity. So it's endless today. And unfortunately, there is sort of this attitude of don't ask questions, take the pill. Don't ask questions, take the pill. Why is everyone so afraid of us asking questions? Like what can go wrong by asking a question? Why are doctors so threatened by that? Why are they annoyed by it? Right? Like if I'm going to go buy a car and the car dealer says to me, don't ask any questions, this is the car. I'd be like, I'm not buying that car. Why isn't the car dealer letting me ask any questions about the car? What if I'm selling a house and I go to the broker? Well, you know, what's going on here? The pipes, what? You don't trust me? What do you mean? I've been a broker for 7 years. Like, this is the house, buy the house. No, I want to do my own investigation. I want to see what's going on behind the scenes. Before I invest in this house, I want to see that everything's working. But when it comes to medicine, Big Pharma makes sure that they ridicule those that ask questions. There's a lot of shame. And we saw that with COVID, that even doctors were silent. And it's very scary. It's terrifying. Because maybe if we ask questions, there wouldn't be any answers. So again, not against conventional medicine. I go to the doctor, but I ask questions.
I love the way that you're phrasing it, though. Like there's something going on that's causing it. It's not from nothing, which I think that's right. That's not part of the conventional conversation anymore. It's more like, okay, well, how do we treat it? And I know it's, I'm thinking about myself because I'm always, a lot of people get annoyed at me for this in my family, whether it's my mom or my sister or my husband, when they'll be like, okay, I want to watch a movie, or, oh, Lauren, I saw this funny thing on TikTok or Instagram and they send it to me. I'm like, oh, I don't watch videos. Or people will post videos in WhatsApp groups and they're like, did you watch? I'm like, no, I don't watch videos. They're like, what do you mean? And I said, I don't know what's going to be in it. And I really feel like everything I consume, it affects me. I don't even know sometimes, like I'll watch a random video and I'll have a dream about it. And it's not even necessarily bad, but I'm like, it's in my brain. I didn't pay that much attention to it, but somehow it got stuck in my brain. So like, if there's something violent or something that I don't consider myself an empath, I'm probably more on the other side that like, I'm so wrapped up in myself, I don't notice other people's emotions. But sometimes I'll see things that like, I'll have a bad dream or it'll give me a bad feeling. And I'm just like, I can't take the risk. I have too much to do. I have kids to take care of. And it's interesting, like just what you're saying about kashrut and eating certain foods. It makes a lot of sense.
That probably means you are an empath. Empaths often, especially if they recognize that they're sensitive to videos and things, that's usually a sign that you're empathic if you watch something and then you dream about it. And the reason why they kind of shut people out and don't notice it is kind of a protective mechanism, because they know they're so sensitive and caring and intuitive that they say, okay, I can't allow all this in. Just like you kind of don't allow the movies and the videos, you probably don't allow yourself to even look at what other people are experiencing, because you know then you'll just make it your own. So it probably means you are an empath. You go into careers of nurturing people and helping people. That's just how it goes.
Well, that checks out. Before this, I was a teacher and I love teaching, and I definitely at least feel like with children, I it's easier for me to take away those blocks with kids. But one thing I also want to move into, because I know your time is limited, is we were talking a little bit before we started recording actually about PCOS and fertility and, you know, different things that I would say, like beyond the conventional conversation about PCOS and fertility, where, you know, the conventional thing is like either take metformin or do fertility treatments. And you were already starting to talk about like how PCOS manifests in a, I don't have the language for it, like on an energetic level in the body. And I would love to hear you talk more about that.
Right. So I also work with infertility, and I would say, you know, 20-30% of the time when it comes to infertility, at least in the cases that come towards me, it has to do with a woman having PCOS. And, you know, what is PCOS? PCOS is polycystic ovaries. There's also something called PCO, where it's like the person is just polycystic and I see the cysts other places in the body, not necessarily in the ovary. So, and I've had women come to me and they have all the symptoms of PCOS. And then I look at their feet in the areas of the ovaries, and there's no cyst there. You could usually see cysts in the feet. And they'll tell me, oh, I did an ultrasound. The doctor didn't see that my ovaries had issues. But I will look at other parts of their bodies, and I'll see cysts, internal cysts there, just by looking at the bottom of their feet. So it might not be sitting at the ovaries, but the body is cystic. And so oftentimes PCOS will go undiagnosed. But in any event, when I treat any disease, I always see the disease as giving a signal to what is emotionally wrong with the person. So for example, polycystic ovaries is when the body produces too many cysts, right, in the ovaries, and they don't, it's like follicles that don't always necessarily even get to the right size, like they're smaller, and they basically multiply. And these follicles basically is physically like, you know, the brain didn't tell the body make one follicle. It told the body make a lot of follicles, which is like a lack of a boundary. And it will tell the body to stop the growth of the follicle too soon. Okay. And so when I look at that manifest in the body, I know that that person is manifesting that emotion. And most, and not all, but a lot of my PCOS clients have a boundary issue. And I've noticed certain emotional symptoms that come with PCOS. So oftentimes girls get it in early development. And I see that the girl was uncomfortable in her sexuality, and that sort of immaturity of the egg coming to the right size is sort of her immaturity of being able to go into her femininity and her sexuality, kind of staying innocent, staying young. It could be she had a negative sexual experience. It could be that, you know, members of her family looked at her inappropriately when she started developing as a girl and she felt ashamed. It could be she had some sort of abuse around that time, and then her body kind of became almost frozen and it got stuck in a certain cycle. And I often find that my PCOS clients have boundary issues. And so if I see, you know, follicles multiplying, that means that there's nothing in the system of the body that says stop enough. And usually a woman has an issue saying stop and enough in her personal life. So, you know, there's a natural protocol for PCOS. And today doctors know reduce sugar, get off of dairy, right? There's like get off of gluten, things that sort of help with insulin resistance. But I also do the emotional work that comes with that, which is say no. Just like you have to say no to cake and cookies, you also have to say no to people who ask you to do things that you don't want to do. You also have to say no to your body who wants to stay up and watch videos and you have to go to bed. It's a boundary issue. And oftentimes I've even had women who suffer with PCOS who are actually very, very regimented and they are big doers, but they never say no to themselves and they never stop. They think that they have to perform and perform and perform. And that's also a lack of boundary. So it's not necessarily a failure on the part of the woman. It's more of an overextension of the woman. And I find that to be true in the majority of cases of PCOS, where a woman does not know how to say no to others, they know how to herself, and limit herself and what she expects from herself.
It hits very close to home, everything that you're saying. So where does someone even start if you notice they lack that ability to say no? Is it like something like internal you have to work on? Is it just like, just start doing it when someone asks you for a favor, say no? Like, how does someone even begin to develop that?
I go deeper when I work with clients. Like, I will look to see why is it that they feel good when they say yes versus when they say no. Maybe when they were a kid, when they said no, they were punished or shamed. And when they performed and they said yes, then they were rewarded and they were loved. And so oftentimes a woman, and generally women, we provide services. That's what we do. We're nurturers. And so it's greatly encouraged for us to continue to nurture. And oftentimes it's hard for us to say no because we associate being a nurturer, loving and kind with constantly saying yes to being in service of others and and our families. And so there's like a tremendous amount of shame with saying no, because I feel like if I'm not providing a service, if I'm not being, we consider it productive, then, you know, what am I really? Who am I really? And so it's very simplistic to tell a woman, just say no. She can't. If she could just say no, she doesn't need me. You know, it's like something happens to her when she says no, like a tremendous amount of shame and this pressure happens to her and she's uncomfortable. She, like, I know for myself, I suffered with PCOS for many, many years, for the last, I would say 10 years. And I could never say no, not to my kids, not to, you know, today my ex-husband. And it's something I still struggle with. And I've been better with it in the last year. And my PCOS has gotten a lot better. And so I know that it's for sure easier said than done, but you have to get the emotional support, whether it be therapy. I do trauma therapy with women, whether it be any kind of therapy to be able to see why it is that I feel so terrible when I say no. And you need to do, there need tools. Some people do EMDR, some do tapping, some people do somatic healing in order to see why they have such a negative response to saying no, what's their association with it. And I do a lot of like background work, like a lot of inner child, where I look to see what does that little girl think about giving. And I give a lot of exercises of being able to say no and receive. And it's not simple. There's a lot of failures in it. And we get back up and we try again. It's work. It's a lot of work. And people sometimes don't even know that it's not okay that they say yes all the time. Like they think they're being righteous women.
Yeah. Well, I think that is something a lot of us have grown up with. You know, that's the ideal, that martyr mom or woman who is always doing for everyone else and puts others first. And there's that feeling of like, wait, am I being selfish if I say no? Or I know for me, just even like the general, I talk about this a lot on the podcast because I feel like when I have guests come on, this comes up a lot, but like the need to be productive, a lot of the stuff you were saying before with anxiety, the need for my house to be clean, you know, just the little things that like it all has to kind of look like it's in a wrapped up in a perfect box. And it is exhausting. And it's interesting though, because I'm thinking now, like when I've had bigger PCOS flare-ups, there's been a bunch of other, you know, environmental factors. Like one example is, let's say when the war started, my symptoms were like out of control and they had been very well under control for a long time. Now, obviously there was like a tremendous amount of stress and I wasn't sleeping well, but I also was like staying up on my phone looking at the news until 1 a.m., which I never did before. I was cooking for like tons of families every weekend, soldiers. And I was like, I had no, like I wasn't eating, which normally I'm eating all the, I'm very careful about the way I eat. So it was like a multitude of things, but there was also definitely a lack of boundaries and taking care of myself. And that's, I've never thought about that piece of it. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. And if you think about it, like the Torah is all about boundaries. Hashem is like, gives us 613 boundaries, what to do, what not to do. It almost seems like he's neurotic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the truth is that God is setting up limitations for us, even like Shabbat, which is like the 39, you know, av melachas that we're not allowed to do, which were the things that were done in the Mishkan that we can't do now, is actually boundaries. It's all boundaries. It's like motions that we can do that we, it's like an energy thing almost, where like we have to be in this state of allowing the boundaries of Shabbos to protect us. And it carries us through to the entire week. And when people start to look at the boundaries that they put in their lives, whether it limits, you know, limitations on their food that they take in, whether it be limitations on their sleep that they put on themselves, limitations on what they will be willing to do emotionally for other people, it's basically creating a shield around themselves. And we see that Hashem loves structure. He loves boundaries. Abraham was known for his chesed, but if you look at his entire timeline of his life, every single test he had was to have boundaries. Lech lecha mi bet avicha, leave the house of your father. He's toxic for you. Take, you know, separate from your nephew because he's in the wrong crowd of people. Take another wife, even though you love this one. kill Yitzhak, throw Ishmael to die in the desert, even when he did, you know, a bris milah, and he wanted so desperately guests, God brought out the sun and brought it closer to the universe. It made it so hot that nobody could leave their house. And the irony of it is that, like, if I was God and I didn't want Abraham to go out, you know, and work himself after surgery, and I saw that this guy has no boundaries, I would have, I don't know, put him in a coma, given him diarrhea, you know, made him paralyzed for 24 hours. It's a lot simpler than bringing the sun closer to the universe, and the entire world is almost burnt crisp. I certainly wouldn't risk the universe to teach Abraham a lesson. But the truth is, the lesson was for mankind. It wasn't just for him. And the lesson was too much kindness, too much chesed at your own detriment will destroy the world. And we see this today in this generation. It's so appropriate because we see what's happening now with, oh, a seven-year-old boy thinks he's a girl. Be nice to him and don't tell him otherwise, because we have to spare his feelings, then cut up his entire body and torment him. Chesed without limitations is dangerous. The ocean without the sea to stop it is dangerous. There is nothing that's, you know, unlimited, that's not being blocked, that if it wasn't being blocked, isn't dangerous, right? The skin is the limitations of the blood. You cut open the skin, right? You open it up in a place where it's not supposed to be, you bleed out, right? The arteries, if it has an opening where it's not supposed to have an opening, a person, God forbid, can die. So the universe is made up of a lot of boundaries, and God is constantly telling our forefathers, boundaries, boundaries. It's so critical to the body. It's so critical to the emotions. It's so critical to our lives. And I'm telling you this for myself as a high level empath who feels everything around her. Really the key is to tune into how I feel, not how other people only feel, but how do I feel? Do I feel like I should be up all night right now watching videos of people being kidnapped and tormented? Is that really how I feel? Or am I avoiding sleep because I feel like I don't have any value? I'm not important. And the way that I can show sympathy and empathy is if I'm with a pain of Am Yisrael. But in reality, if I'm up all night and then I don't feel good and I can't function as a mother, what good am I? If I can't function with my clients because I was up all night watching videos, what good am I? The boundaries that we set are for us to be better, is for us to heal, is for us to function better. So this whole thing of lack of boundaries usually comes when we're avoiding a feeling, right? So when I say no to someone, I feel terrible. So what feeling am I avoiding? The feeling of rejection. So just say yes to feel that feeling of, okay, they like me now for that 1 minute, right? So we have to ask ourselves why, as women, are we so afraid of rejection? Are we so afraid of abandonment? Are we so afraid that maybe if we say no, what's going to happen? You know? And the earlier we start saying no, the earlier we start to set boundaries, the healthier relationships we attract into our lives.
Wow. I don't even know how to respond because I'm thinking so much about what you said. And I think a lot of women listening, it's going to really ring true. And I just know, having worked with many, many women with PCOS, with fertility issues, and with all sorts of other hormone things, I think that lack of boundaries and lack of being able to put ourselves first when it comes to whatever it is, physical health, emotional health, is something that a lot of people are really struggling with today. So I think this is going to be a really helpful starting point for people who are, I feel like I'm having a little bit of that wake up call now even. And for people who then are looking to learn more from you, to connect you, to tell us where they could find the bracelets, like tell us everything if people are looking to go deeper with you.
So I have, you know, on Instagram, I have a link to my website where I have all these different courses. I have a course for other people who want to learn what it is I do with the crystals, and they can even become certified by me. A lot of people don't do the certification. They just kind of want to learn the course and learn about stones. It's very fascinating. Then there's also courses on how to open yourself up to your soulmate, how to open yourself up financially, because all of the physical things that go on in our lives, they are manifestations of something that we're allowing in or blocking. And so I help people see like 26 different ways to open yourself up financially. Has a lot to do with our childhood, has a lot to do with our bad habits, has a lot to do with certain behaviors we have. And these are things that I've collected over the years working with people and seeing patterns that people have that block them to all these different things. And so I basically show the different patterns of different people from different experiences with my clients, and I kind of showcase them. And I'm very, very practical. And that's why people love coming to me, because, and I think that there's a very big place for therapists, and people sometimes put down therapists when they're with me because they're like, oh, you said to me in 1 hour what my therapist took her 10 years. And I'm like, I'm not a therapist. I'm not meant to sort of over the years be a listening ear and guide you and build you from the bottom up. Mine is a lot more dramatic and let's call it like appealing, because it's like, you don't say much. I tell you everything I see, and it feels like, wow, I'm seen, I'm heard. Like, how'd she see all that about me? It definitely feels amazing. But at the end of the day, I will send you back to your therapist and I'll say, okay, work on this, this, and this. I can't do so much of the legwork with you because I'm not a therapist. I do a lot of trauma work, and I guess do a lot of emotional work. I do 3D healing also, which is like, you know, I work with frequencies and I see like patterns of people, and I do, you know, things like that. But I, again, when it comes to therapists, I think it's actually has a very, very strong place. And I think that also, it's important to always make sure that there's somebody that's listening to you and supporting you in your life. And I definitely would not have the time to do that full time for someone just because of, like, you know, the demands that I have. And so the courses are there online to give you that support. And I have a bunch of different courses online, how to get rid of childhood trauma, stuff like that. I also developed these healing bracelets where I took different mineral stones and I combined them. One is for anxiety, one is for trauma, one is for infertility, actually, which is also helpful for hormone balance. And it helps the body, you know, temperature change. And so there's a lot of theories about PCOS and infertility issues, where a lot of Chinese medicine say that it's all about temperature of the body. So like the baby and the uterus is kind of like an oven that cooks the baby. And if the oven is off, the cake is not going to cook. And if the oven is too hot, it's going to burn the egg and the cells. And if it's really a lot about the body's temperature. And so what the crystals that I put that absorb into the skin do is they regulate the body's temperature. They work with all the hormone systems, and they basically get the body to go into, like, you know, symbiosis. And people are raving over it. People, you know, have found it to be very, very helpful. People who, you know, have an irregular cycle use the bracelets and they wear it. And it's not overnight. It takes weeks. Some of the bracelets are work faster. Like the anxiety-free people have said that it works, like some people say, within an hour, right?
Wow.
But some of the bracelets take much longer. We have emotional eating bracelets that when you wear it, it signals to the body much faster that you're, like, fuller, rather than it taking like 40 minutes for your brain to process. It basically sends you the message within 7 minutes. But can you eat through it and anyway eat? Yeah, that's something else. But the emotional eating bracelet helps wake up the timing system of your brain to send you the message, I'm full, faster. So we have, you can go online, it's the www.thehealerscollection.com, where they have an array of different bracelets, and you kind of look at which issue you have, and you can see the issue when you see the bracelets, because there's one that's called the energy booster. So instead of having a coffee at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you know that that's your lull time, so you wear the, you put the energy booster bracelet on within 20 minutes. That's actually our fastest bracelet, because that's the whole point of it. You feel a tremendous amount of energy, and that actually works with the adrenal glands to kind of give it a little bit of a boost instead of, you know, drinking coffee, which is not very good for you, especially not at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, I developed these bracelets because I felt so frustrated that, you know, people would have symptoms and I knew the stones and the minerals could help them. But I was like telling them, okay, put onyx here, tape it here, put this there. And so it was been actually one of my life's dreams to get to a place where I can develop something that somebody can just wear on them, and the minerals, you know, go through the largest organ of the body, which is the skin, and get absorbed. And it's phenomenal. We've had, you should see the reviews on the website. It's insane. People stop me in the street and they're like, wow, these bracelets, like I thought it was a scam and I couldn't believe it, but it helped me so much. And I told my partners at the time, I said, you guys don't understand. It's untapped. It is untapped. The world is so almost just starting to scratch the surface of the powers of mineral stones. And again, it's not something that's like, you know, like as they say, a segula, you wear it and then it's like magic happens. No, it's a mineral. Just like if you took a vitamin and a mineral, and instead of putting it in your mouth, you put it on your skin and it gets absorbed. It's medicinal. So it's not going to work if you put it in your pocket.
Also, just what you were saying about the temperature of the body, because a lot of people that we've had on the podcast have spoken about, you know, fertility awareness method and tracking your temperatures as you're trying to get pregnant and how that can show you when you're ovulating, when you're done ovulating. And like, we know that the body temperature rises, and even using a method like that, it's you're taking data, you're getting data points, but you're not manipulating what's happening in the body. You're not able to actually change it. It's really interesting to hear you just talk about how like the minerals can actually help you regulate the temperature. And maybe that will help someone also if they're listening. They're like, wait, I don't really get it. This just sounds kind of like out there. We know like your body needs to be warmer. You are warmer to, you know, allow a baby to implant properly and start the process of growth. So it's like cool to hear it from that perspective, because we don't talk about that so much here.
Right. So think about like a lot of the symptoms of PCOS can be acne, right? Acne either on the back, chest, or in your face. And what is acne? Acne is actually one of the reasons that there's there is it's one of the side effects of what's called false heat. Okay. The body is too cold. So PCOS is actually considered the body temperature is too cold. Okay. And so what happens, the body goes into crisis throughout the day and it'll say, oh my God, I'm freezing. And then what it does is it sends false heat, like a rush of heat through the adrenal glands to the body, through the kidneys. And then a person will suddenly break out with acne because the heat came up too fast and it kind of affected the sebaceous glands in the face and in the body. And that's why it's one of the symptoms. It's one of the symptoms of false heat. And so when you regulate the body's temperature, the acne goes away. And it's definitely, definitely a temperature issue, PCOS. I mean, it's all about the temperature. So when the body's temperature is out of whack, that's when we get a lot of these symptoms. So one of the things I tell women to do when they want to regulate their body temperature, besides wearing the bracelets, is I tell them to eat foods that create heat in the body. So you can actually Google this, and you know, this is a dietitian. There's foods that make your body hot, and then there's cool foods that cool you down, right? And the foods that make your body hot are very good for PCOS. The foods that cool you down are not. Okay. So dairy is inflammatory and it lowers the body temperature. It makes it full of mucus. So it's one of the first things that dietitians do when they're treating PCOS, besides the fact that it creates insulin resistance. So, and it's full of estrogen and, you know, you're playing with hormones. So again, all of this is body temperature related. So diet helps with that. The bracelets help with that. Emotions help with that. And there's a certain kind of, you know, maturity development that happens to a woman when she's working on those things. So the follicles that stay at a small size, like let's say being, you know, too small, they didn't get to like the right size in order to implant. That means that there's something about her emotionally that's not developed, because she can't, you know, set the boundaries and she can't eat right and she's not taking care of herself. It's almost like a little kid, right? Like that person needs somebody to come and tell them. So as she matures and she takes responsibility for herself and she says no, it's part of growing up. It's part of maturing as an adult, knowing my boundaries, knowing who I am, being honest with who I am, and being comfortable in your own skin.
I really appreciate your perspective on it. It's given me a lot to think about in my own healing journey, my own PCOS journey. And I know everyone who listens to this is just going to have like such a deeper, richer understanding of themselves from it.
I'm on the same journey. Let me tell you.
I know. I couldn't believe when you told me before we were recording, because I've listened to interviews with you and I was like, I didn't know you have PCOS. It's always like also fun to see someone, you know, who you didn't expect. And also someone who has a beautiful family. I think it's very hopeful for people because you said you're a mom of six.
I have six kids with PCOS. I hadn't even 10 pregnancies. So
wow,
I was able to manage it because I always knew what to do before I got pregnant for the few months before to get pregnant. But then, you know, after my sixth child, I kind of stopped taking care of it because I really didn't, you know, I wasn't really at a place where I wanted to have more kids. And then it worked as a natural, you know, it prevented me from getting pregnant. And now I kind of am like, okay, I'm 47 years old. It's time for me to like sit on top of this and take care of myself. And, you know, there's the exercises you have to do. There's removing dairy from your diet. There's increasing the right foods, you know, all about that. And there's saying no. And it's definitely the number one thing I'm working on this year, which is my boundaries. It's like everything with my kids, with my career. I, you know, added hours on my housekeeper. I brought somebody to help me cook during the week because I work so much. And I was like, you know, if I don't give myself permission to get help and say, yeah, I'm not an angel. I cannot do everything. And it's part of this humbling sort of humility where you say, I don't have to be perfect at everything. I don't have to be available all the time. And, you know, there's a part of you that wants to make your kids food and they want you, you want them to eat your food and they'll say, oh, you know, we like the food you make. We don't like other people's food. But I say, you know, you can have a hug instead. You're going to have to eat, you know, the person who prepared the meals before. You know, I bring someone in now a few times a week and she does meal prep for me. And obviously they love my cooking and they want me to do it, but I can't do everything all the time. And it was part of me growing up and saying, I have limitations and I love making other people happy. And it's something that I have to kind of fight constantly. And I say to myself, okay, I have to make Hashem happy. And Hashem wants me to take care of myself, right? And it says in the Torah, Vishamartim me'od b'nafshotechem, it says, take very good me'od, very good care of the nefesh that I gave you. And if we're not happy, and if we're overworked, and if we're not protecting ourselves, we're basically breaking God's commandment. And so I kind of focused on self-love this year. And it's kind of what it's all about. And it's been really, really great. Like I could tell you that it's changed so many different aspects of my life. And I realized that it's good for my kids too, to hear the no, you know, it's good for them to realize that the world isn't always going to say yes to them. So, and kids can do anything. And one of the things I learned that I really tell myself probably like 500 times a day is, if you do something, and this falls also for clients, if you do something for someone that they can do for themselves, you're ruining them. So I often think, can this person do this on their own? Can my client do this or should I do this for them? Even in healing, it's easy for me to just put my hand somewhere. But sometimes I think, no, the person has to do the work. And so it's the same thing with parenting. It's the same thing when you're married. It's the same thing when you work with clients. You have to also let other people do the work because that way they develop and that way you conserve your energy.
Wow. Sorry, it was really such an honor to have you. Thank you for your time. Thank you so much for all your wisdom.
It's phenomenal that you do this kind of work and kol hakavod to you. You're basically creating, you know, saving lives and creating beautiful families. And it's a big mitzvah what you're doing, a big mitzvah.
Thank you. You're so sweet. No, I really, I feel very lucky that I had a very, very dark time through infertility and was like, I can't understand, like, why would this happen? How could this happen? Had a very like dark time in my faith with it. And I really feel very grateful that like, I'm able to see why, because I needed to go through it to become the mother that I am, to have the career that I have, which I love, like the work I do with the women I work with, I love them and I love seeing them. Like, they send me baby pictures and it's the best thing in the world. And I feel very grateful that I'm able to really see, like, that dark time that I went through was very connected to the light at the, you know, on the other side of it, which I don't think everyone who goes through infertility feels.
But I always tell people that your trauma, if dealt with correctly, will end up becoming your superpower. So we can look at our past and say, okay, I'm traumatized and it ruined my life. Or why was I meant to go through that thing? How can I turn it into a superpower? I would say 80% of the time we're able to do that. And when we're able to do that, huge gifts come into our life.
It's true. It's really true. Wow. Sarit, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to the About Health and Hormones podcast. If you loved today's episode, I would love to know. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so I can make this podcast even better for you all. I would love to connect with you. Follow me on Instagram at Lauren Allen Nutrition or head to my website, www.laurenallennutrition.com, to learn about my coaching programs and stay up to date on all of my latest workshops and courses. I am so glad you are here today, and I wish you all health and happiness.